Hi, I'm Rob Shore, and I run Wholesaler Masterminds, and this call was recorded on December the 18th, 2009. As a member of Wholesaler Masterminds, not only do you get a chance to meet with your peers twice a month to talk about important issues facing wholesalers and how your peers in the industry, with the guidance of a coach, that's me, choose to tackle some of these challenges. Each quarter, I'm going to bring a guest on the line, and this is the first guest that I brought on to Wholesaler Masterminds. It's Kathy Freeman, and you'll hear more about her. I hope you enjoy the call. When you're done listening to it, do me a favor and check out the rest of the site. Just click around the navigation bar up at the top of the site. Take a look at the homepage. Look at the video. Take a look at the testimonials. And if you're interested, give me a call, and let's talk about if a wholesaler mastermind group makes sense for your business.
This conference is being recorded.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to our call on December the 18th. It's our last call of 2009, and as I promised, I wanted to be able to bring a guest aboard today, and I'm really delighted today to bring aboard Kathy Freeman. Kathy is founder and CEO of Kathy Freeman Company, and for two decades, she's been bringing her experience of executive recruiting to the financial services sector. She formally started her firm in 1992. And if you look at her client list during that time, it's asset management firms, wealth management firms, service provider organizations, and distribution companies. She's developed an outstanding reputation in our business for being a valuable resource to national firms that are seeking to shore up their teams with senior-level sales, marketing, and client-facing talent. It's her depth of experience in attracting and assessing the best in-class talent and this functional expertise combined with extensive relationships across the country that allows her to drive consistently successful results for her clients. She's a member of the International Association of Corporate and Professional Recruitment and has been in that organization since 2000. And she collaborates with other corporate HR professionals and executive search colleagues that are committed to developing best practices within the field of recruitment. She also played a leadership role in that organization's small search firm roundtable, and that's a contingent of boutique search firms whose CEOs meet annually to better discuss the search process and the product they deliver. She's often sought out by conferences for panelists as a media resource to give her perspective on human capital issues. She has a BS in marketing from Cal State Chico, and she lives in beautiful San Luis Obispo, California, with her husband and two kids. Kathy Freeman, welcome to Wholesaler Masterminds.
Thank you, Rob.
It's delightful to have you here. And I know that
our group,
thank you. And I know that our group is looking forward to hearing what you have to say. So let's just launch right into it. You know, we've had a couple of pre-conversations about the topic that we'd like to discuss. And as I promised the group, it really wasn't going to be a discussion about, how to work with a recruiter. Not at all. There's many members of our group that have been wholesaling for quite some time, and they're very happy wholesaling. That's not their goal. So what we wanted to do is use your expertise kind of as a very fine observer of people and process within our business to give us some insights. So you spend a lot of time kind of thinking at the 30,000-foot level here. You spend a lot of time talking to executives that run distribution for all types of products and into varying channels of distribution. What are you hearing about potential change? Because, I mean, heavens knows 2009 was a year of change in our business. I suspect you're hearing that that's not going to stop.
Right. Well, Rob, you know what? It's definitely true. And really, the distribution executives that are running these different businesses, whether it's annuities or mutual funds or managed accounts, their wheels are just turning to try to ascertain how to run these businesses more profitably and more effectively. So I think that they've come out of 2009, the clients, the advisors that are their target audience, they've gone through a completely chaotic period as well. So the firms at large, the executives are trying to figure out how to reposition their sales organization so that they can drive profitability in that business as well as be more effective. So I think what you saw in 2009 and what's going to continue in 2010 is the whole theme of change. So some of these people are talking about, are you wholesaling? I know that's been a topic for the last, 4 or 5 years, but it's a much more economical model than external sales.
Not necessarily more effective, by the way, just more economical.
No. But it is something that is, you know, on the table to be discussed in terms of how can you complement an external sales force, and then what is the ratio that makes that an effective penetration model.
Yes.
And then the other consideration, you've got some of these firms out there that are combining channels, right? They had all these different disparate channels for wirehouses and RIAs and banks and whatnot, and you're seeing a lot of them combine the channels so as not to have as many feet on the street out there and cut some costs that way.
Didn't you actually have a company you were telling me about that did kind of a unique collaboration of channels? Because normally it's the standard channels that we hear about. You know, they take the bank division and lump it in with the wirehouse division as an example to react to, say, the B of A Merrill Lynch behemoth. But you were telling me about one that was an interesting combination. What was that one?
Well, what I've seen this year, there's a couple. You know, I had a firm that I worked with a few years back in the high net worth space. So they really wanted to penetrate the private client area, which is really through the intermediaries in that space really have to do more with influencers to the high net worth, accountants, CPAs, estate planning attorneys, et cetera. They built out that channel, but in the downturn, they actually combined that channel with their wirehouse channel. Now, if you want to talk about two different ends of the spectrum, that was a huge adjustment for both sides on that organization because those people that marketed to the wires were not accustomed to calling on CPAs, attorneys, or typically, I don't think, direct appointments with the super high net worth. So
right.
That was a big change. I have seen a few firms that have been collaborating in creating this high net worth paradigm to really be providing some value add even within that wirehouse channel. So some specialists and that type of thing.
When you talk to these senior executives, what are they saying about comp?
Well, compensation's a challenge. They're still trying to bring it down. So I think going forward, you're going to see these executives trying to range in compensation. I've had multiple conversations this year with these executives that are talking about target comp, right? So they're going to say, and some of them do it by tenure, they're going to say, hey, you know what, Bob, you've been with us for, 20 years now. You've always been a top producer for us. We're going to plan your compensation for this year at, let's say, $4 to $4.50. And this is what we expect you to do. They're not going to give the same opportunity to somebody that is brand new in the organization. When that person is going to be, 5 years out or something, they're going to be not able to reach that kind of a pinnacle. They'll say, hey, Joe, your compensation is going to be between $2 and $2.50. In some of these firms, they're saying gone are the days where we're going to create a specific basis point payout and allow you to have these blowout years of compensation. They're really trying to rein in the compensation so that they can drive, some profitability into these distribution areas.
So when you think about this confluence then, this confluence of product rationalization, compensation tweaking, to, if this comes to fruition, kind of range-bound wholesalers into a particular compensation framework, the advent of more e-wholesaling, channel rationalization, there's that word again. What comes to mind is kind of a characteristic that wholesalers really need to have a good handle on, as you have observed it?
Sure. Well, so much more than when wholesaling was kind of gathering its speed back in the 90s, it kept going up and up, and there were more firms adding wholesalers to their organizations, and the firms were selling more and more. And up until that point of 2001, it was just a great, grand experiment of expansion. Today, there's been more contraction, and since 2001, there has been more contraction. I think flexibility is really a key characteristic that you have to possess in order to be successful in wholesaling and financial services sales. And it's an interesting characteristic, I think, because it is one wherein people don't think about it. They don't wake up in the morning and they think about being successful. They think about being dynamic and effective and all sorts of different words, but you don't really think about being flexible. But I think more and more you're going to have to proactively acknowledge that characteristic, because firms are going to continue to throw changes your way in their own efforts to become more profitable and to do things better. So I think that I kind of compare the wholesaling role to a professional athlete. They train, they perform, and they need to be flexible to adapt to whatever comes at them, like in football. You know, if you're tenured, you might be a Brett Favre. If you're a rookie-type person, you might be a Johnny Knox. But either way, whatever comes at these guys, they're ready to dodge or duck or run or jump and stay ahead of the competition. I think if you're not flexible in today's environment, you're going to get bummed out about some of these changes that get thrown your way. If you've come up through the ranks for 5 or 10 or 15 years and you've been accustomed to calling on wirehouses, and then we come to 2009 and, geez, what happened to the wirehouses? All the rules for the wirehouses and all the players are changing. We've got some of those people migrating to RIAs. We've got firms that are combining like Morgan Stanley and Smith Barney, and Merrill Lynch got bought out by Bank of America, and all the rules really went out the door. So let's say your firm says, okay, great, we're going to make sure that you're calling on the private client segment in addition to, you know, the wirehouses. Yeah, that's a big change. And some people, if they can't get their arms around it, are going to just kind of shut down and say, I'm not doing it, I'm going to leave.
All right, so flexibility, arguably, through our conversations prior to this and your statement here on the call, becomes one of the primary characteristics that wholesalers need to be kind of self-aware of. They might think that they are, but it's a good chance to just kind of be introspective for a moment and kind of assess if that characteristic is really front and center as much as it would need to be. What else do you think, besides flexibility, is another trait that becomes important?
Well, the other things that I think are critical, there's a lot of things I try to cover in my interview process, which is where I get these opinions. But I think intangible credibility and strategy are a couple more elements that are important.
Could you explain that intangible credibility? That might need to soak in for a minute. So, yeah, I know you're going to expound on that, please.
Well, I think that, I think we all are effective when we're selling, and we've always thought that people do business with people that they like, right? So maybe we could take a minute and talk about why people think that they – why do people like to do business with you? Can we ask the group to see why?
Yeah, let's do that. So let's go out to the team and just kind of find out what your thoughts are in that regard. Let's start with Dick. When you think about, okay, people do business with people they like, why do people like you? And I know it almost sounds like an odd question, huh? Why do people like me? But why do people like doing business with you, Dick?
Well, because I think they believe that I can add value to their business, that I can help them do more than they're currently doing and provide better solutions for their clients. And I think that's, to Kathy's point, that's where the credibility comes in. They don't like you because you might be a gregarious guy and have a lot of nice, jokes and that kind of stuff. That's a different type. I think they like doing business with you if they believe, at least this is my perception, if they believe that you can add value to their business and help them do more and provide better solutions to their clients than they're currently doing.
Okay. Thanks, Dick. So that old adage then is people do business with people they like. But I want you to, Kathy, tell me more about this intangible credibility piece, because we've had discussion about it and you've actually written some words about it, and I just want to do more of a dive there. So expound on that, will you?
Okay. Well, I don't know if anybody's seen the blog that we put out this week, but it's kind of tangibility, intangibleness, and credibility. And I ask in my interviews to these executives that I spend 5 to 10 hours of time going through someone's background when I do an interview, and I do that because it's not about the resume. It's not about the fact that someone's been a top performer with whatever specialty that they've had. It's really about what makes them special you know, what is their process. So I try to dive pretty deep.
So, Kathy, I want to let that soak in for just 1 second. And the reason is, you know, sometimes we've had interactions with interviewing entities in our lives. And the interviewing entities, be they, you know, a boss or a sales manager, you know, divisional VP, whatever. Maybe it was even an executive recruitment firm. I heard you say that you spend 10 hours in the interview process?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that the reason I highlight that for just a moment, aside from the fact that I know you to be thorough, and there's some props for Kathy Freeman Company, but also to say to wholesalers, as you ascend through the career ranks, if that is your goal, you better be prepared for conversations and discussions about career that go well beyond where you might have experienced them to be today. Because I've also written on the blog about sales managers that have no clue how to interview. They're terrible at interviewing. So it's just I pull that out as kind of a sidebar piece of information, because you could be faced one day sitting across the table from someone like Kathy who really wants to do an extraordinarily deep dive on you. So I'm sorry to digress, but that was kind of a moment to just kind of call that out, because I think it's important. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I thank you. And I also think that depth is really behind success. So out of all these hundreds and hundreds of sales executives that I've interviewed over the years, and my specialty is sales and marketing, is because, you know, typically in this specialty, you've got nice-looking people. They always have the right thing to say, and they're very likable. So you have to really dig deeper in order to understand what makes them successful. So it's not just accolades, but intangibility that gives you credibility. So when you're going, Dick, you talked about you add value to your client's business and that gives you credibility. What about those people that you're just meeting with? What resonates with your prospects? So what is it that you can hand out to them when you first meet them to give them some sort of component about who you are and why you're credible? Over the years, I've talked to successful salespeople that have said, you know, hey, I was really into sports. So I got drafted into the NFL. I didn't have play time, but I got drafted. That's always a good commonality, a good talking point. You know, a lot of these people that I do business with are really interested in, you know, sports and football. Some of them have said that they've made it to the Olympics or to Olympic tryouts. Is that something that's worth mentioning? Some people are into more extreme sports, marathons, triathlons. Those things take persistence, dedication, endurance. But in a quick fashion, you're indicating that you are someone that pushes yourself out of the mainstream of, you know, anecdotal sports participation. Let's see, if you're not into sports, and you want to get commonality and credibility quickly. I've heard people talk about a particular school that they've come from. So this whole thing about, higher education and these Ivy League schools, some that give some sort of ground of common respect if you came out of Harvard or Stanford or some of these schools that are pretty recognizable, some people will just, you know, glom to you like glue.
So what about if you're not a sports person and you didn't go to an impressive school? What where do you go then?
Well, one of the things that I really enjoy doing in my work is to try to draw out in conversation with candidates that I'm working with trends from their earlier years that might translate into characteristics that make them successful, but make them real and credible to their audience in the process. So it's really a lot of fun to get them to uncover hidden things about their upbringings that make a difference in who they are today. So for an example, if you said, hey, you know, in an interview I might say, hey, you know, talk to me about a trend in your childhood that's made you successful, or think about something back in your childhood or your, you know, growing up, your earlier years that might pull through into some sort of trend today. For myself, I grew up as the daughter of an Air Force colonel, so I was born in Maine, and by the time he retired from the Air Force, we lived in California, so I got to traverse the country. I was in 6 schools during 12 years between grade school and high school. probably a few more than most. Well, so what's the takeaway on that trend? You know, as I look back into my earlier years, I realize I'm an extremely adaptable person because of having to move around all of our creation. I'm also exceedingly outgoing because I was always the person airlifted into some new place and I didn't know a soul. So guess what? If I didn't reach out and say, hi, I'm Kathy, I didn't get to make any friends. So you won't find me being someone that's going to be sitting in the corner of a room when I walk in with new people. No, I'm always going to be that person that's going to go out there and introduce myself because I've done it all my life. So if I get out of high school and then I get to go to college, and that's my choice, right? Do you think I'm somebody that's going to pick one school and go for some stability? Not really. I ended up attending 4 colleges in 4.5 years on 2 coasts before I got my degree, and that's kind of a trend, right? I mean, that's the net result of all this relocation is not only am I adaptable and outgoing, but I've also had the opportunity to live in most every part of the United States or to visit it, right? So this experience provides a real strong opportunity as I'm out there introducing myself to people on a regular basis to have something in common. You know, I went to school in North Carolina. I can talk ACC basketball. You know, I can talk about what it's like to live in the Southeast and some of those characteristics over there. I was born in Maine, so I can talk about the fall colors. You know, I lived in Nebraska, of all places, so I can talk about, you know, where Warren Buffett's at and, you know, why in the world that man would live there. I have no idea. But, you know, it gives me something to talk about, a foundation for credibility. I'm a real person, and I guess as I go through and I interview people that are successful, one of the things that I take away is that typically there is something there deep that has provided some foundation for who they are today. And I think it's extraordinarily fascinating, and many times they haven't had the time to do that for themselves. So it's kind of a fun exercise to say, what is it about you that makes you credible to your audience, to the people that don't know you, that haven't seen that you can really add value to their business yet? What else is there about who you are as a person that resonates with new audiences?
So Dick, when you think about that, when you think about, as you do kind of that quick self-assessment as Kathy speaks about it, What kind of reservoir do you dive into that helps pull out the real and authentic thing that you would connect with people on?
Well, it's the background. I mean, it's, you know, I think my depth of experience in the business and different facets of the business, both as a producer, as an executive, as a executive of both an insurance company and a broker dealer. You know, I've been in the business 30 years and seen a lot of different things happen. So I've been on all sides of the table. And I guess that's the thing, and we've talked about this before, Rob, that's the thing I try to, you know, relay to people when I'm talking to them is I'm not going to just give you the company line. I mean, we have great products. We're a great company. There's real value here. But I'll try to give you as an objective view of what, you know, this client solution needs to be and what your concern should be about the solution you're going to present them, you know, based upon the experiences I've had, you know, in several different facets of the business.
So, Kathy, you tell me as a learning moment for you kind of uncovering this. If you heard that from a candidate, would that be the answer you were searching for, or do you nibble around and try to get more out of it?
No, I think I'd probably push back a little bit, and I'd say, hey, take me to earlier in your life. Take me to earlier before you got out and got into insurance. Tell me about something in college. Tell me something about high school. Tell me something about grade school. Think about something back in your formative years before we all got employed and got paid for what we do that might bring to bear something unique about who you are today.
You know, I would go back to, you know, the high school and college days. You know, I was involved in the Boy Scouts, and I was a senior patrol leader, and you know, all of those things were... I guess, Kathy, my answer would be it appears in all facets and all phases of my life I had leadership positions I was honored to have, you know, from the earliest years of my life until now. So.
Yes, and yes. You'll push... It was, yeah. Yeah, those are the things that I think are more important. So if you were in the Boy Scouts or you were president of your fraternity at college or you were high school student body president or whatnot, you know, those things that you can pull out to you know, that demonstrate a trend from leadership early on. So clearly, if you've been in this business 30 years, you've been on both sides of the equation, from being a buyer of services to being a representer of services. But either way, no matter what you do, you're always a leader in your role. I think that that's terrific. I think that, that, you know, that's a characteristic that resonates with people. But I guess net is I see that in today's environment where there's so much gloss and so much superficiality that people really want to know and get under the covers with who they're talking to and who they're looking to trust, right? So like Bernie Madoff, I mean, we all talk about it, but people just gave their trust to that man because he held a certain position. And I don't know when the last time anybody asked him any questions, but, right, people going forward after last year when this all came down are much more suspicious. And so I think that going forward, being effective, you know, in what we do and who we are to new people that don't know us and haven't had the benefit of experiencing our trustworthiness, they're going to be looking for something that's more personal, I guess.
Well, so this whole notion of intangible credibility, I found interesting, and there's other characteristics. We talked about flexibility. We talked about intangible credibility. What else is another significant piece that you think is an element that successful financial services professionals share based upon all of the interviews and observations?
Well, this last component that I think is important is the strategy piece. And, you know, that takes place both internally and externally. So I don't think I'd propose to suggest strategy on the external side, because I think that you know, as a wholesaler, you pull that out of your clients and articulate ideas, just like what Dick had talked about, giving them value-added business ideas that help them grow their business. But I really wanted to touch a little bit on internal strategy and managing one's career, not meaning that you necessarily are looking for any kind of promotion, but just that it's exceedingly important to keep yourself in front of senior management as being a trusted, you know, driver of results, being someone that is really, I guess, dedicated as much to your own personal success as you are to your whoever you're reporting up to their success. I think I guess I've just seen over the years that the people that have done extraordinarily well are those people that don't live in a bubble that says, this is my income that I want to drive higher, that they really have a bigger picture strategic focus of managing up and to their bosses and to their bosses' bosses. They make a campaign of creating visibility for themselves that says, what I do, what I hear is important to the firm, and it's important for you to adhere to or listen to what I have to say as you go forth and try to drive new initiatives and new directions for the firm.
So why is that important? And I'm not being facetious. So I'm a wholesaler. I'm in the field. You know, I have my marching orders to raise X amount of money to get, you know, this kind of distribution of business inside of our products, to form this number of new relationships, whatever the metric is. Why is it important for me to extend that much effort into managing up?
Well, especially in the wholesaling role where everybody's located remotely, you do not want to be a person on a team. You want to be the person on the team. Because as we go forward and we see all these changes that have occurred and that are going to continue to occur, the people that are the ones that remain on the team as opposed to those that are getting cut or getting the less choice kind of roles thrown at them are those that haven't taken the time to really solidify and anchor themselves with senior management. Senior management, if they're going to sit there, and Rob, you know, you drove these businesses, so you can either confirm or deny what I'm saying. But senior management, as they sit around the table and try to make those decisions on who to keep, it's not just a regional. It's not just on who's driving the best results. It's about who's giving back to the organization directions and good value-added ideas like you try to do with your clients, do it back to the the senior team.
Yeah, I mean, I would say certainly that if you are doing an assessment of an entire organization, one of the assessment considerations has to be how much does this person contribute? Because if you have, you know, it's always a management conundrum. If you have someone that is producing at a very high level, but they don't help their peers, they're constantly complaining, they are really difficult to deal with from a home office perspective. The home office staff, say, you know, in the service or in the product area, can't stand to do business with them. Those are pretty weighty negatives that come into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, an example that comes to mind is just a rock star salesperson that I've known over the years, and really a pleasure to talk to because he did drive incredible sales. I think he built really good relationships with his clients, but he just could have cared less about this internal piece. And he had a reputation internally in his organization. They called him T.O. I guess in Texas that's known for – is that Terrell Owens, right? I guess
yeah.
Terrell Owens was a football player that's known as a prima donna. And, you know, everything went his way, and he delivered the results, but nobody liked him. And here this guy is terrific driver of results, but guess what? When the firm does a consolidation and allocates what, they're not giving this guy – that much consideration. They know he can sell, but he's not a team player, and he's not helping them to drive the success in the company. It's really about what's in it for him. So he ends up with the short end of the stick when some of these changes come down, regardless of the fact that he's a top producer for him.
So I want to understand, for my benefit, for others' benefit, what, you know, how do you manage up without brown nosing? Because everybody hates the brown noser, so there's absolutely an art to managing up. What's your take on that?
Well, I believe that the successful sales individual is just as successful, and they apply the same characteristics to their clients as they do internally. So if you have a process about how you drive your success externally, turn that process around and then apply it internally. So you manage your communications externally, right? You drip on your clients through emails, through letters, through value-added ideas, whatever. You need to do the same thing on your manager as well. What are things that, you know, you can do with them? Managers are always clamoring after their sales team to give them reports, give them data about calls, et cetera, so they can put some sort of science around who's doing it right and what kind of results do you get when you do it right. They're just clamoring to figure out how to replicate somebody's terrific success. That's why they do it, not to be anal or retentive about it. So if you proactively came up with your own report about this is what I do, this is, you know, my metrics, and you hand it over as opposed to having to be hounded about it all the time, that's something that's really helpful, you know, to senior management.
It can also be, as I listen to you speak, it can also be simply just being a person available to give feedback and a person available to give candid feedback. And I think candor inside of an organization is a valuable commodity and one that a lot of folks are not comfortable with because they feel that it might be threatening to them to be candid. But candid doesn't have to be disrespectful. Candid doesn't mean that you are, you know, a heretic. It means that you're willing to just go a little bit out on a limb and maybe offer an appraisal that isn't directly in line with the company line, and it's appreciated because people, and it's presented in such a manner, again, that it is not meant to be a slap in the face to what the organization is trying to do, but you're bringing field perspective back. And I think that's a very valuable commodity that absolutely gives you a higher standing with your immediate supervisor and senior management than you'd otherwise have if you clammed up.
Rob, when I was working for you on a couple searches, I remember when you were, I think you were working on a new marketing plan or something over there at Allstate, and you were talking to me about how your team was really contributing to the ideas that you were then funneling out into these marketing pieces. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how that interaction went. Who gave you great ideas, and did you solicit, or did you just leave it open, or did somebody step up to the plate and, you know, try to give you some input?
Well, I mean, what we did, and we thought it was really important to always have wholesaler buy-in to everything that we did on the marketing side of the equation, so that there was a feeling of ownership about the process. And so we actually had teams of people that were assigned as commenters and reviewers on these pieces. So they worked in the implementation process. They worked in the kind of ideation of the concept to a certain place. And we always, you know, we always stated that we value your ideas, and then at some point somebody's got to make a decision about which way we go. So if your idea isn't the one that gets chosen, please don't feel bad, but know that you contributed to the greater good of the piece. And then so from there, we used folks as reviewers, and we got so much valuable input, so much valuable so many valuable ideas that were put into action. And then the benefit, of course, back was more times than not, the wholesalers had a good sense of ownership about the piece, so that if one of their peers had a negative comment about it, they could actually say, well, you know, we actually participated in development of that, so net, all in, we all felt that it was, you know, a good piece to put on the street. And we found that to be valuable.
Yeah, and I think you developed out some good pieces as a result. So I don't think that there's anything about managing up that is brown nosing. I think that the people that do that, it's an emotional approach that they're taking. I think the bottom line in the successful people that I've interviewed year over year, it's about process, not about emotion. Driving success through their clients is about process and credibility. Driving success internally, which doesn't mean you're looking for a promotion, but it does mean that you're an effective partner with senior management. Again, that's about process, your dedication to process, not about some sort of emotion, you know, that Johnny's, you know, on, you know, Supervisor Bob's A-list. So it's really more of a pragmatic process.
Well, Kathy, why don't we do this at this point? Why don't we go out and see if there are any questions that folks would be interested in asking about you, the firm, the process, your observations, having, you know, spending your days speaking to senior leaders in our chosen field. Let's see if there's any questions. So let's just go out to the audience.
Kathy, this is Dick. The only question I would have is based upon the last 18 months of turbulence we've had in the economy, what type of impact has it had on your business? Does it make for more activity for you, for about the same, or for less?
Well, that's a really good question. For search, it's certainly been a slower 18 months because so many firms were doing layoffs, right? They weren't really looking to hire, you know, strategic talent, which is where I try to focus my efforts. Now that the economy is turning around, there's a much greater emphasis on I've got a bit in my budget. There's trade-offs going on today, and you might see this in your own firm, but I really see trade-offs. Their firms aren't tremendously profitable yet, so they're saying, this looks like a more priority area for us. This looks like an area where we can drive more profitability or get greater traction or market share. So we're going to take from this area over here that used to be important to us and take those resources and apply them to this area. I think we're still going to see some more layoffs going forward and consolidations as firms try to get their arms around what opportunities they really want to take advantage of going forward. There has been a lot of I've spent a lot of time over the last 18 months just kind of counseling people that have come to find out that they don't have a role. They can be very discouraged. People that have been on their companies for 10 or 15 years found themselves on the short end of the stick with some of these consolidations, and it sure is demoralizing for them. So I always try to be take a few minutes and just be an encouraging ear for them. and try to help them to figure out what best next steps to take. Certainly people that haven't interviewed too much are a little bit, uncertain about how to manage that campaign. But things are certainly turning around, I think, for 2010. I don't think it's going to be really super robust in terms of hiring, but I think there will be some good strategic hires. And since I focus strictly on client-facing talent, sales and marketing and relationship management, that it should be a good year for my practice.
How would you judge the confidence level of the executives you're dealing with in these businesses? How are they feeling about the prospects for 2010 for their sales kind of as a whole?
That's a terrific question. It really depends on who the executive is, and a lot of it has to do with what their product lineup looks like. There's a fair amount of firms out there that are still scrambling to bring in new product, airlift teams in, a portfolio managers with some track record on a particular product to complement what their lineup was. So if you were a large cap value firm and had done well over the years, you're sitting there trying to figure out, what am I going to add to my repertoire to make sure my sales team has something to sell. So the people that are really frustrated in the senior ranks out there are those that haven't made the right decisions or haven't had the resources available to them to go out and buy something that they need to make sure that they've got something to sell going forward. One of the firms that seems to be doing really well out there is Hancock Funds. It's just an interesting firm if you watch it closely, because they have been adopting funds and they've been getting funds sub-advised for them, but they have this complete diverse lineup of products. So there's always something to go out there and talk about. And so when the market started, falling apart, they could always leverage over to talk about fixed income or, talk about technical opportunity or something that had some piece of it that resonated. So I think the execs that are really confident going forward into 2010 have some interesting products that they're excited to talk about. And it also seems that everybody's trying to figure out products that will get these people to get out of cash and dip their toe in the water with some not too high risk types of portfolios. So, it's like, okay, how can we get them out of the money market funds and out of the CDs and get some of that money back into the market? So I think there's a fair amount of confidence going forward, but nobody's expecting a big growth year next year. I think what are the numbers I've been hearing from the economists that I'm familiar with, there's like 3 to 6%. So I don't think anybody's expecting any substantial growth or resonation in the stock market like we saw in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Other
Thank
questions
you.
For Kathy? Kathy, we absolutely appreciate the time that you spent. And just to kind of wrap it up in a holiday bow, if you will, it's this whole notion, as I've heard you talk about, it's this whole notion of flexibility. It's this notion of intangible credibility. And really taking a minute, based upon what you walked us through, to be able to examine what can you draw out of your background, even beyond how we tend to think in the business environment, but to draw deeper out of the experience well, going back, as you say, before we're employed, to figure out ways to build additional credibility pieces to be that real individual that you speak about. And then this whole notion of thinking strategically, most appropriately for our discussion here today, was this notion about managing up. And I think that we're probably going to have another call about managing up and get input from people about how they manage the process in their own firms, and if they don't, what can they do better about it. So for the Masterminds, I thank you for joining us today. And for Kathy, I am deeply appreciative of you taking some early morning Pacific Coast time to be involved with us. And I wish you a happy holiday.
Thank you. I enjoyed being here, and thanks for the participation. And it was nice to meet all of you.
Thanks, Kathy.
Bye-bye.